Downway FM presents...
China has to go from being a sprinter to a marathoner. China has been sprinting for 25 years, and it's been a very impressive sprint. But along the way, they're depleting their water tables, they're poisoning their people with pollution, their healthcare system has gone to hell, on and on. The problems that China has swept under the carpet during this period of fast growth, the carpet's getting lumpy, and the country's going to trip on these lumps if China doesn't solve them.
That and more on this episode of China Business Cast, brought to you by Danway FM. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Robert Ness. In this episode, I interview James McGregor, author of 1 Billion Customers, Lessons from the Front Lines of Doing Business in China, and founder of J.L. McGregor & Company, a boutique China-focused research, advisory, and investment firm. James McGregor has many years of combined experience as a journalist and businessman in China, and from the perspective of his best-selling book and as CEO of his company, he will offer some general insights on the business environment in China. Questions and comments? Leave a comment on Danway or shoot me an email at robert@danway.org. Well, tell me about your company, J.L. McGregor & Company.
Well, J.L. McGregor & Company has been put together in the last year as I was out traveling the world on my book tour. I was running into more and more people, more and more investors who were interested in the area and more people that wanted consulting. And I had to decide what I was going to do next. And basically, I've gathered together a group of partners who I've known over the last 20 years in Asia of different skill sets. Rick Chong is a longtime VC who I go back to the 80s in Taiwan with. Bill McCahill is a former acting U.S. ambassador to China and longtime diplomat who I brought in from the Wilmer Hale Law Firm. He was working with Charlene Barshefsky there, and he knows government, knows how to fix problems. Brought in Matt Cummins and some others from the media. And we're a pretty well-rounded group. And the three-legged company, this one is Pacific Epic, our research branch, which has a very large hedge fund client base. We focus on telecom media technology information. The other second leg is our strategic consulting. We help a lot of multinationals and others with their business strategy, communications, government relations, the whole gamut. And the third one, which we are just gearing up now, is we're raising a fund of funds for investment in Chinese venture capital. So we're having a good time, we're working hard, and we're making a lot of progress every day.
Talk generally about the strategic consulting market in China. Why did you choose to open that kind of company? It's a really hot market.
Well, I've been out. I traveled 250 days last year. Mm-hmm. My book came out in October of 2005 and became a bestseller. I went out on the speaking circuit as a book tour, and then Bill Clinton's speaking agent recruited me and started putting me out all over the world for quite decent fees, and I was mixing in quite interesting circles. I've been shared podiums with Alan Greenspan and Henry Kissinger, dinner with the Queen of Jordan. I mean, I've gotten all over the world. It's been great, but as I did that, I met hundreds of CEOs and hundreds of big investors, and they're all looking for ways to get in here. They approach you for their problems, and there's a lot of people in China who do consulting on entry level. We'll get your business license for you. We'll help you get started, etc. We operate at a high level. We operate with CEOs and boards and big strategic problems, big strategic issues, and That's where we're placing ourselves, and that's where our expertise is.
How important are having relationships to strategic consulting? I mean, we all kind of had the impression from, you know, especially Henry Kissinger's business, that, you know, you had to be an old China hand who knew all the right people to be in the right place to do strategic consulting. Now, is that the way it is now?
Well, it's very different. I mean, Kissinger's day was being able to walk the CEO of the company in to meet the premier or the president, the foreign minister, the minister of commerce, and also being able to solve problems at a high level. But it's a very different game now. In fact, Kissinger, I know, and I've put on a couple of lunches for him in Beijing. And the first lunch I put on for him with Chinese entrepreneurs was the first time he had really met people who were between the hotel clerk and the prime minister level. I mean, he really hadn't, because he's so important, he couldn't get around to meet average entrepreneurs or business people. But today, you got to know the market. You got to know who's doing what, and you got to work all levels of the government and all levels of the business community. So it's a very different game, and you got to be on the ground, and because this place changes very quickly. But you just, it's no longer, there's no one guy. You open a door and get something done. And you got to understand instinctively what's going on. I mean, we've done enough of this. We've been in so many different deals here, involved in so many businesses. We can sit down with a board or a CEO and they say, we're doing X, Y, Z in China. And we can say, well, X and Y won't work. Here is Y. Z will. And you can either take a client and string them along, which a lot of consultants do. Somebody comes in with a bad idea, they know it's a bad idea, but if you tell them it's a bad idea, you don't earn any money. So you say, well, why don't we do a one-year contract and we will do this study for you and that study for you, basically to get money. We'd rather that people pay us on long-term contracts at significant prices, and then we don't have to BS around. We can say, that's a bad idea, this is a good idea, let's go with this good idea, here's the next steps we need to do. Here's a government relations plan, here's a business strategy, and work, and then coach their executives and the whole thing. I'm too straightforward to be a consultant who's going to go around and do a bunch of studies and spin wheels just to get monthly fees. I want to work with people that have big ideas and big business opportunities here, because that's kind of fun. At the end of the day, you want to make a change in the world and have an effect on how people live. And that's what's fun about this place. I mean, China's just such a carnival every day with a fast-paced change and people doing new things and such an entrepreneurial atmosphere. It's intoxicating. I just spent after 15 years here, I've been in and out over the last 3-4 years because I wrote this book and then I was gone on speaking tours, etc. And I'm back here now and it's just so fun to be back. But you get dated very quickly, even though I was coming in here a lot. Unless you live here and you're on the ground and you're bumping into people and you're listening to the media and just kind of absorbing China through every sense, you'll lose touch with this place quickly.
Tell me, what are your impressions on the media industry in China?
I've noticed that the media here is much better. When I first came here in the 80s, the media was just complete doggerel and propaganda. And they still have propaganda papers, of course, but it's a very competitive media, Chinese media, and there's a lot of good information out there. You've got to sift through it because there's a lot of inaccurate information, but there's a lot of quality information in the media, just the normal Chinese media. You just got to kind of hunt and peck for it. And there's a big maodun because the big media companies of the world want to come into China, and they're all geared up for it, and they all get excited. But I have yet to really see a media company be able to come in here from the outside and do much. Because Chinese have huge restrictions. What would you do if you're running the Communist Party here? You want American or European TV coming in here and handing out the content we have on our TV? They look at keeping a grip on their media as key to them staying in power. So I fully understand what they're doing, but you can see why the outside companies come in. And there's some contradictions in here because, for example, there's a quota agreed to in trade negotiations of how many foreign movies China has to take a year. But any movie that comes out is here on illegal DVD. Well, there's a compromise there because the culture ministry doesn't want all these foreign movies, but they know people need to be entertained, and to keep people complacent in a political sense, the more entertainment, the better. And so with the one eye open, one eye blinking, they allow all these DVDs on the street, so everybody here sees more movies than I think people in America do because they're too busy to go to the theaters.
Yeah.
And so China has its cake and eats it too in a lot of sectors. They get away with bloody murder on the media. There's also on the internet, this is interesting. We work with some internet companies. And there's worries that among foreign internet companies that they can't be successful in China because eBay has failed, Yahoo has largely failed, etc. Why have these companies failed? They haven't failed because China. They failed because they were dumb in the way they handled China. Look at eBay. eBay came in here and bought HNet, founded by a guy named Xiaoyi Bo. Xiaoyi Bo was the math champion of China.
Think about that. The math champion of China. Pretty formidable character, right? Mm. He built an eBay kind of clone called HNet. When they bought him, they should have just let him go. Give him best practices, support him, mentor him, but let him, he understands the market, let him develop the market. Instead, they came in and said, well, we're eBay, we're going to do this like we do everywhere else in the world. They put in the eBay platform, bought him out, he moved on. And then meanwhile, Jack Ma started Taobao and offered free listings. And now eBay's thrown in the towel. They've just given up on the market. But was that because China was so difficult, or they came in thinking they knew everything and tried to bring their overseas business model in? Yahoo, kind of the same thing. I was on an investor in Sohu through Dow Jones early on and on their board through their NASDAQ listing. You know, we watched Sina, Sohu, NetEase rise here. How did they rise? They copied everything Yahoo did in the States. If Yahoo did something, they did it. And what did Yahoo do? They came here and they just ranged around. They had management problems one after another, never really had a strategy. So they turned around and they bought Sanchi RE, 3721 from Zhou Hongyi, and put Zhou Hongyi in charge. Well, Zhou Hongyi is a smart young entrepreneur, but he's also, once he got a lot of money under his belt, became pretty arrogant, and he was running it like a dictatorship and disillusioning people, and he basically kind of brought Yahoo further down. And now there's lawsuits between the two of them now that he's left. So they turn around in a desperation move, pick probably one of the best internet entrepreneurs in China, Jack Ma off Alibaba, gave him $1 billion for 40% of his company. So we'll see where they go now.
Are there any online companies or just tech companies in general who you think are positioned for success in China? So we've heard these failure stories. What about, are we going to have any success stories anytime soon?
I don't know. There's a lot of internet companies poking around here now trying to figure out what they do. We'll see on what happens with Baidu and Google. I would never count Google out. Google's a very smart company with a lot of horsepower behind it. And Baidu is also a smart company, but if you look at how they're structured and how they do business now, Baidu is it's kind of worthless in some ways, and it's bigger in this market. However, its searches are they don't separate paid and free listings. In fact, if you're paid, you move up, and it doesn't look like a paid listing. And so, businesses that depend on internet optimization are going to have trouble here because Baidu is not optimized. Baidu is very biased, and I don't think that's a long-term business model here. I think the quality of search is going to matter eventually. Problem with Google is they've become so bureaucratic. It takes 3 months to hire a secretary, and so unless they change the way they do things here, they're kind of headed down the eBay Yahoo let's commit suicide in China route, and we'll see how they do. So it is a dog-eat-dog world out there, and it's very competitive, but quality will win out in the end. A lot of what comes out, you know, these copy things. I remember, you know, for example, IKEA. IKEA is a brilliant retail concept for China because it's quality goods, they're cheap, you put them together, you can, it just fits the price point, fits the room size, it just works for China. So, you know, then you got these guys that started this chain called, you know, instead of Ija, it's Ija, and Ika, it's an IKEA copy. Where have they gone? They go nowhere because after about 2 or 3 years, people figure out that they just don't have the business model, don't have the quality. So quality will show through in this market. I think what's one of the problems right now is under WTO, things have opened up so much that Zhu Rongji believed you had to open up this country and make the Chinese companies competitive with international competitors in their own market. They had the home advantage playing field and let them come here and become competitive with those guys, or they'll never become international players and never be able to lead internationally. So the WTO agreement was so wide-ranging and deep, we were shocked in the business community. But what's happening now is some of these foreign players are grabbing market share very fast, the retailers especially. And so China is now coming up with anti-monopoly laws and other regulatory ways of slowing them down because they want to give the Chinese companies more time. In my opinion, what China is going to have to do is they're going to have to one of the problems is you can't slow them down long enough to make state industry efficient. And China's big companies are still owned by the state, and they're still political as hell, and they don't often have the right incentives up and down the line for actually profit motives. Many people are worried about how they, you know, how they line their own pockets. And it's going to take forever. You try to get those companies and make them competitive with Walmart and IKEA and General Electric, etc., it's not going to happen. What they've got to do is they've got to get their private companies proper funding and proper opportunities and quit favoring the state sector so much. Then China will be competitive because these entrepreneurs are world-class. They can take on anybody in the world, you know, once they've had some years to learn their business. So we'll see. I think there's an ideological problem there.
Mm-hmm. About your book, one thing that I thought made your book really good was the stories. I mean, it read like investigative journalism. But I was wondering, is there anybody now that you've started this strategic consulting company, is there anyone on the Chinese side or the foreign side who's afraid to talk to you or work with you because they're afraid of being the subject of your next book?
Well, I have no plans to write any other books in the next decade at least. It's too damn hard. And I'm a perfectionist. I've spent 3 years on that book. And I've kind of said what I have to say about China. I wrote that book to have a 10 or 20 year lifespan because I don't talk about the last non-performing loans or the economic imbalances or trends. I talk about human behavior, how Chinese people react in the commercial world, what makes them tick, the psychology of them, foreigners in China, the interactions. And that's all timeless. I mean, I modeled it in a little bit of a way on Carl Crow's book, 400 Million Customers, because that was written in 1937. And if you read it today, the behaviors he describes of Chinese business people and foreign business people in China still hold true today, and that's what I aimed at. Mm. And I don't, my book was, I was very tough and blunt in how I said things, but I said it with a sense of humor and a sense of affection for the Chinese. I'm not some Lao Wai who's saying, you know, looking down on people and saying they're this, they're that, they're this. I describe Chinese people very bluntly, but it's in terms of my Chinese friends have told me, and I said it with affection, which was interesting in doing the Chinese language edition, because I wanted to make sure my own people translated the Chinese language edition, or without, if you remove the humor and nuance, you'd come off as a racist. And so I had it translated, and then I had it retranslated because the quality wasn't good enough. So I don't think anybody's afraid of working with me because of that or because of my next book. And nah, I haven't. In fact, I found that the book has is very good. People think I know what I'm talking about.
The translation, is anything that'll be left out?
No, because I had it. It's done in Fanti in Taiwan and Hong Kong. It has not been published in the mainland. Mainland publishers said we love this book, but we'd have to cut out so much it wouldn't be interesting anymore. And that's not because the book is anti-China, but it talks about people who are currently in office. And if you're up, then it tells like the story of Lai Changxing and the smuggler. And they have their own propaganda line on what he's like. And I have my own view after interviewing him and doing a lot of research. So there's no odds in a publisher printing it here because it could be questioned. Mm. So I don't care. I don't want to be infamous or famous in China. I'd just it's not published here.
What? So you had a lot of great storylines in your book. What developments have happened since the book was published? Are worth talking about? Maybe Lai Changxing or the Xinhua Finance.
Well, if you look at what's transpired since the book came out in regard to what's in the book. Lai Changxing, the smuggler, he was within 24 hours of being extradited to China, and then there was yet another court order that he not be. So I don't know where he sits. He's still kind of in limbo. UT Starcom, which I write about, is kind of dissolving in front of our eyes. Johnny Cho, the COO, left and joined Google, and he's since left Google. Bill Huang, their CTO, I just read the other day, has joined Netcom. Their share price is in the cellar. It looks, from what I've seen, looks like they've ended up to be a one-product company. Wu Ying is still there fighting the battle every day, I'm told. Xinhua Finance, it was, we should have driven a stake through their heart 10 years ago because they've come back.
And they're smarter. They've come back smarter this time, but the same kind of nonsense that they want to control financial information. The world kind of erupted, and what they wanted to do, they're backtracking on, and it's all kind of sitting in this wohu limbo. But so, well, that's, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same in China. So, but generally, the book is not dating itself. I think it's gonna have a long, long shelf life. I've been very lucky because people that'll run a multinational in China, they'll buy 25 books and they'll ship them back to all the top people at their company because they figure if they read it, they're going to understand China and they're not going to have these ridiculous estimations on how things should go here and misconceptions. So it's become kind of a MOFON prevention tool or something for some of these guys. So.
One point you make in your book was that the Western management practices of delegation and empowerment don't really work in China, and that rather you need to have more of a strict command and control management style with Chinese employees. Is that changing, especially with kind of a new generation of more globalized college graduates, or is this a long-term trend that's going to generally remain unchanged?
Well, I think you need, it is changing. Well, let's look at what sectors, though. Here in manufacturing, China works very well in manufacturing because manufacturing is a top-down system. And you run it, you manage it, you control it from the top, and China's manufacturing quality is world-class. When you get into the service industries or R&D, where people have to think and create, top-down controls are not going to work so well. But it does take leadership. Chinese people will respond to a leader more than a Westerner will because they're brought up in a society where they're trained to be led, not to lead. Whereas sometimes in the West, we're brought up to question authority at every moment, even starting in kindergarten. So leadership and mentoring people here works. You know, really showing you care about them and that you're going to guide them through, you care about their career. I mean, my company's here, I've always treated people like family. And with Dow Jones, when we were small, between Christmas and New Year's, I'd take the whole staff on a trip traveling in China. Even now, I mean, this Christmas Eve, I had the whole staff of our small company together with my family. And that matters. Things are personal here. And mentoring, I mean, as you may have seen in the book, when Morgan Stanley had his joint venture with China Construction Bank, it was a financial success, but a complete disaster personnel-wise, because it was just these warring states between the Chinese and the foreigners. The guy who was on his way to fixing this was, he spoke no Chinese, knew nothing about Chinese culture, history, but he had, he was a mentor, a very capable gentleman, because Chinese can always read if someone's, you send somebody in, whether they're just deadwood from headquarters or they know what they're doing. And he mentored him. He cared. He treated him well. And then, unfortunately, he dropped dead at a young age after less than a year in the job. And, Chinese employees still send flowers to his grave every year because positive reinforcement is so valuable here because Chinese society is a negative reinforcing society. In the West, like if your kid takes piano lessons and there's a piano recital, and my kid plays and he gets 80 notes out of 100 right, I'm going to talk about those 80 he got right and go, boy, that was great, even though if he sounded terrible. Where our Chinese culture, the kid would get, let's say, get 99.5 notes right and half note wrong, the parents will bang away on that half note. How did you get that wrong? And I'm generalizing here, but it's pretty true. And friends of mine who have mixed marriages say this, the hardest part is bringing up children. Because the making you feel guilty and criticizing you to try to make you better is very much the Chinese way. We're so much in the West, especially in the age of Oprah, we're all about telling you how great you are and trying to do positive reinforcement. So you bring that into your office and you treat people well and you show you care and you boost them up and praise them. It may be the first time anybody's been nice to them in their lives. It works very well.
Hmm. Anything else you want to add?
I guess the only thing I'd add is I'm currently, my paperback of my book, the U.S. edition paperback, is coming out in September, and they've asked me to write just a short afterword to add, and I've been kind of struggling with what the heck do I say. I'm sick of looking at this thing. I don't want to write anything. But the theme I'm kind of coming to is really, and I think this is where how I look at China today, after being in and out of here for a few years and being back here now, I realize just how wide and deep this economy is and how it's impossible to get your arms around China as a country, just like it's impossible to get your arms around America as a country. You know, in the 80s or 90s here, we knew the rich guy in Dalian or the rich or what industry would be in what city. And now there's so much going on in so many places. You can't even know what's going on in Shanghai, much less the whole country. The second thing is China has to go from being a sprinter to a marathoner. China has been sprinting for 25 years, and it's been a very impressive sprint. But along the way, they're depleting their water tables. They're poisoning their people with pollution. Their healthcare system has gone to hell, on and on. The problems that China has swept under the carpet during this period of fast growth, the carpet's getting lumpy, and the country's going to trip on these lumps if China doesn't solve them.
If you enjoyed this episode, please stay tuned for our next. This is China Business Cast. I'm your host, Robert Ness, and this is brought to you by Dan Wei FM.